your nephew and one of his friend or something? Who's the? There are two guys. They were.
The guys who did the documentary were both my nephews. Okay. And then the guy who did the music was my third nephew. Right. They're all three brothers. And they're doing another documentary now. So
okay.
I think in Portland. They're doing a documentary about. I think they're doing a documentary about somebody in Portland.
Huh.
So they're like, you know, they've taken that and decided to, you know, get into
those
the business.
Where can I buy a pair?
These are very old. These I got in Spain. David Letterman. I wore them one time on David Letterman's. He looked at me and he said, "What are those?" I said, "They're just sneakers. I don't know." He said, "Where'd you get them?" And I said, "Spain, about 20 years ago." I don't know what they're called, even, you know. And of course, they're getting old now, so look at they're wearing down. So
that's part of the appeal.
They are, but they are comfortable as hell. So you get to wear them.
I remember badgering you at the party for Battered Bastards, and I said, "This is really a good movie," and you went, "You know, you're kind of." And then I heard that they wanted to do it, and somebody. And then I read that Justin Lin was going to be what, a producer or a director?
I guess Justin Lin bought the. I don't know what he bought. He bought the. He bought rights to the.
To make the film.
Well, he bought rights to the. Documentary.
Okay.
For making it a movie, I don't know why he. You don't need to do that. I mean, anybody can go make a movie. But I was involved with him for a while.
He struck me as the, you know.
I don't know whether he'll do it or not. I don't know. I mean, there's another guy and I that are actually kind of interested in doing our own thing with it. And that's Todd Field, the director of Todd Field. And Todd was the bat boy on the club.
Yeah.
And so Todd and I got to talking about it, and we kind of looked at each other finally and said, why aren't we just sort of talking about this ourselves?
Yeah.
We both know the story really well. We both know the people involved. And there's only really four people left that really know it.
Would you play your dad, maybe?
I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. I have mixed feelings about it. You know, I think that first of all, movies are a separate entity. You can't let anything influence your decision on doing something except for how you know to do it, which is the script good? Is the character good? Is it something you think you can do? And is it something you'd want to see? So I look at it that way. And so if Todd and I come up with something that I think we'd want to see, and then I know who the guy is. And Todd's same way as I am about it. It's like, yeah, maybe I'd play it, maybe I wouldn't.
Does he sound like you, or do you sound like him? Voice-wise? I mean, I remember his voice from
War Soldiers, Maine. His voice was a little different. He was from Maine, Vermont and Maine, and he covered his accent. I never had one, so I didn't. Mm. The tone of our voices can be similar.
Mm.
I look more like my dad now than I ever did before.
Mm.
I didn't when I was a younger man. I didn't look like my dad much. Looked like my mom more. Now, as I've gotten older, I look more like my dad.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's funny for me to look in the mirror and see him. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to see it.
Thanks.
Especially with Todd directing.
Todd knows the story. I mean, and Todd, you know, Todd and I see the thing the same way. You know, what's that? Oh, so I thought we were. Is that possible? I don't know. You know, I to be honest with you, I'm not much of a developer. I sort of take my time with things. That one's been around for a long time with a lot of people talking about, you know, doing this and doing that. The thing is this, is I really do know it. Todd really does know it. I feel that's a good pairing there in terms of possibly bringing a version. I'm not sure that movie is the way to go. It could be television. I don't know.
Could be HBO.
Well, it lends itself towards seasons. There were five seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that to it. We've discussed that. But I think Todd sees more of a theatrical to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that field still there? And
Yeah, it's still there, Multnomah.
It hasn't been significantly improved?
Not that I know of. Let's talk about this movie. I'm tired of talking. I don't know where that's going. I have no idea. I can't give you any information on that that's worth writing about because I just don't know anything about it.
Okay. Well, right now there's you know, I've also seen The Revenant, both historical westerns, snow-covered, very rough-going mm-hmm. Revenant. But The Hateful Eight is rough going in the third
yeah.
act.
Yeah.
You know, it gets pretty brutal.
Yeah.
There's a kind of a solemn, you know, Iñárritu art film thing going on with Revenant, and this is more of the standard swaggering Tarantino,
yeah.
you know. Yeah. And you're by far the most engaging guy. He's, you know, I figure if I'm going to be anybody's side, it's this guy.
He's big.
I'm not going to be on Bruce Dern's side.
I know, you
Tim
can't.
Roth.
Yeah, it's like, how do you, it's like, yeah, that's the way I looked at it. It was like, yeah. kind of, John, as rough as he is,
yeah.
in terms of his behavior, okay. You know, the guy really believes in the cornerstone of what makes America tick, you know. Yeah. It's like, you're going to get your day in court, no matter how bad what you've done,
yeah.
if you've done it, then you're going to take it to court. People are going to say, okay,
yeah.
you got to pay your debt to society. He believes in that. He doesn't just bring them in,
yeah.
You know, dead with a bullet in the back of their head. He believes that they should get, and he puts a lot of pressure on himself.
So, you know? Anyway, so I like this guy, and I figure he's my guy in this whole thing. So I wasn't terribly elevated by the... By his ultimate fate here. I thought that was, oh, you know, I wanted to. I mean, Jackson too. Sure, he was cool, but I liked you better.
He, well, I think that's, you know, let's face it, in Quentin's mm-hmm. scheme of things,
yeah.
that's the first heartbreaking thing. Is that it's like, well, I guess anybody can go here, and then so it's like that's what happens, and.
And the rumor is that you literally laid there for mm-hmm. how many...
I was there for 3.5 weeks.
How many times?
It was important.
You laid there for 3.5 weeks? Mm-hmm. Dead?
In every shot, yeah.
Wow.
And I was in... It was important because Jennifer and I had spent a great deal of time together.
Mm.
And it was a part of what was driving her whole take on Daisy. And, you know, they were a pair. Just because he's dead doesn't mean he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, you know, you can't just, like, it'd be safer to put a dummy there because it's not going to possibly breathe in a scene or fall asleep and start snoring, which I did once. I just felt, and sure enough, you know, when I was there, sometimes she'd just paw at me.
Mm.
And it was, and I would talk to her after, in between the takes and stuff, like we always did. So John Ruth was very much as he would be instantaneously in the time element of that, very much still a part of her, that she was chained to him.
Mm.
That hadn't gone away to the point where it's going to stop her from surviving.
Mm.
And how she's going to drag this thing and go get free.
Mm.
So I felt just automatically responsible there. You know, it was like, you know, there was no... I also thought John Ruth was still... a functioning character, even though he's dead. He's, and sure enough, it comes back around to him, you know. And I thought it was beautiful the way Sam's character comes to the thinking that you're talking about,
yeah.
which is, no, wait a minute. He had a point.
Yeah.
He had something to say there, and that has to be honored. I liked that. I thought that was pretty cool.
I saw the stage version.
You did?
I did. And I love the part of what I loved about that was Quentin stopping everything and giving
a direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, stop and direction. That was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember as vividly, and please correct me, was the Lincoln letter as prominent in the stage version as it is?
It was different. It was very different. He hadn't finished his work yet, which I now, and funny, I didn't know that screenplay was the one that he had been upset by because it had been leaked out.
Mm.
Then after matter of fact, when I found that out when we were doing the reading, I thought, oh, he wants this done one time. He spent all this time writing it. He wants it done one time.
Mm.
That wasn't the case at all. He was looking to see if he wanted to do it. And because what I didn't know was that he knew he wasn't finished with it. That's what got him angry. He wasn't anywhere near finished with it. And then it went out there. It's like, whoa, guys, I'm just working here. That would be like, that's one of my pet peeves now is that with, and I love that Quentin does not allow cameras, does not allow telephones, or any device you can turn on or off, does not allow it on the set.
Huh.
And I think that should be mandatory because I lived in a time, you know, where we could do anything we wanted on that set to try to find what it is was going to work. The concept that somebody might film something while I'm working on it,
phone or something, yeah.
And I'm not even close to done with it yet, and that being out there, that's really wrong. Just really wrong. So why isn't it also wrong to have your screenplay, when it's not even finished, leaked out there? Bad enough if it was finished, but really bad when it's not finished. So that, in having said that, he did a lot of things different in the fifth act, and a lot of things, and because of that, the table scene went to a whole new that wasn't in that. The table scene where Sam sits down and Walton starts in on him about the Lincoln Letter, and I'm listening to that and where that goes.
Also, no song, as I recall. That was
no, there's no song. There's a lot of things that weren't, you know. I mean, listen, a movie, you put the camera on somebody, there's a lot now that can be said by just seeing somebody when they're not talking and seeing how they react, you know. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of that stuff in the stagecoach where you're seeing the reaction of people. And, you know, and a lot of turf is being laid here. You know, you're setting the groundwork for a lot of the movie here. There's, especially there was a heavier connotation on the Lincoln Letter, and it had a very different outcome in that what's revealed about what Sam did for my character is devastating. You know, it's just completely devastating.
The Quentin cult, if you will, is like 23 years old, starting with Reservoir Dogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was, he's sort of the guy who introduced the idea of violence as attitude, violence as fashion, violence as style. You know, it wasn't exactly dealt with in an earnest, this is real way. It's,
right.
You know, swagger thing.
Yeah.
I was just looking in the New York Times this morning, and the guy interviewed many, many people from the Midwest and from the West about San Bernardino.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic conclusion is that there's everybody out there has this feeling of anxiety about when's the next one?
How do you connect the dots for me?
I think that there's a feeling about shootings and violence different now in 2015 than it was in the mid-90s.
Oh, sure, it's not the 90s, and we're in 2015.
But Quentin's doing the same game, more or less.
Quentin does what he does, yeah. Quentin's, you know, he's like painting a picture, or he's like writing a story, or he's like a filmmaker.
Right.
No, I think that to mix and match reality with fantasy is something I don't understand, but that's just me.
Yeah.
I think that we should understand the difference. I think that, you know, to mix today's politics with... for instance, in this case, a fictional tale about just right after the Civil War.
I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about ground level, water table, a feeling that's in people's bones that this New York Times piece was talking about. People are generally, you know, between Paris and San Bernardino, there's this thing that sudden violence as a normal day-to-day aspect. Coming from the gun culture, coming from everything else. It's a different vibe, you know?
I don't understand the concepts of conversation of the gun culture. We've lived with guns since, what, the 7th century or something? Well, I don't know.
We all know that right now, guns is a trope. It's a, it's not a trope, it's a totem, it's a metaphor that disenfranchised white guys need. It makes them feel good because they're being...
You can say what you want, I don't agree with that. So it's not my thing.
But it's statistically,
you can look. If you think gun control or something like that is going to change a terrorist point of view, I think you're like out of your mind. I think anybody is. I think it's absolutely insane. The problem we're having right now is that we don't have the concepts of how to turn it around and say, you know, you may think you've got me worried about what you're going to do. Dude, you're about to find out what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And that's going to worry you a lot more. And that's what we need. That will change the concept of gun culture, as you call it, to something of reality, which is, if I'm a hockey team and I got a guy bearing down on me as a goaltender, I'm not concerned about what he's going to do. I'm going to make him concerned about what I'm going to do.
I get that.
To stop him. that's when things change. So then you go to movies and you say, what has that got to do with nothing? Movies are movies. It's like a painting. That's like a song. That's like a book. It's like, to me, what's fun about movies, and what, for instance, in this one, what Tarantino does is there's a genre here. It's the Western genre. And like the sci-fi genre, it allows you to ask the big questions. That's hard to do in other genres without looking silly or looking funny. But in these genres, I think you're allowed to. And I like the fact that what Quentin does with this is he asks some real big questions about America, about race, about individuals' attitudes, about love and hate.
He pulls it in,
he's doing his Quentin Tarantino world, which I personally think is and does belong on film. I don't think it has anything to do with anything outside of film. The music, the manipulation of the screenplay. So I can't connect the dots. It's hard for me to. It really is hard for me to connect the dots.
Obama's point was that the guys who are on the no-fly list because of terrorist connections can get a gun pretty easily.
They can also make a bomb pretty easily.
Yeah.
So what? They can also get knives and stab you. What are you going to do about that? They can get cars and run you over with them. What are you going to do about that?
They didn't kill the people in San Bernardino.
But they've killed others that way. Haven't they? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So what are you going to do? Outlaw everything? That isn't the answer.
Just put some controls.
Put some controls. What? So the people who want to defend themselves can't?
No, not so you can't. Just so the idiots can't get a hold of them. That's
do
all.
You really believe they're not going to? Are you serious about that?
Yeah,
are you seriously?
Harder.
What good will that? Oh my God! You and I just disagree.
Okay.
You and I just disagree. I understand that you think that you can control the behavior of people that are dead set on taking your way of life away from you. I think you think you can control that.
No.
And there's only one thing you can do with that, and yeah. Say, no, dude, that's not going to happen. That's just not going to happen.
Good to speak with you, man.
Good talking with you.
Good luck with your art.